over me, giving me a second chance at life, to uncover from the past all the things I tried to hide. And I feel like I've been set free to be the woman I'm meant to be. I never meant to leave broken hearts scattered on the path of those who tried to love me when I couldn't love them back. From the bottom of a bottle, it's so hard to see the light. But now I'm taking steps to make some wrong things right. If I can do this, I can do anything and be the woman I meant. I know it's gonna take some time to earn back the trust from the choices that I made when that was who I was. Doesn't want to go, so you led me to a place I've never been before. And I never would have gone there alone. I'm glad I surrendered, 'cause now I'm finally home. I pray that one day when you look at me, all you see is the woman I meant to be, the woman I meant to be.
Good morning. You're tuned into Recovery Radio down in beautiful Bolivar, West Virginia.
No. Okay.
There we go. We good to go?
Who is that? Yeah.
Yeah, you tuned into Recovery Radio. We sorry for the little glitch. Yeah, it's a great song. That was a great song. Very moving. My name is Boyd, James Boyd, and I am your host this morning for Recovery Radio. And you were just listening to The Woman I Meant to Be, and the performance is by, I'll get her name back in a minute. But that's a moving song, and I want to talk about that this morning. The topic this morning is about recovery-ready families. I had the opportunity, since I last talked to you here on air, to interact with some families who are struggling with addiction as a family, and the babies. We're going to cover that topic as well. But that song was moving, very moving. We have had some changes in the station, and I want to inform you about those, and especially the call-in number. I'm going to be posting I'm on my Facebook page and on the blog and the website for Enlightened Radio. That's www.enlightenedradio.org. And we're going to rearrange and make it better, make it easier and accessible to you, our listening audience, the families who are struggling with addiction. I believe that Recovery Radio is a platform that we need to get the message out about all the resources and the services that are available. You know, it seems dark and bleak and everything seems like it's a mess. But as a person in long, long-term recovery, I can tell you that it is getting better. There are more resources. There are more hundreds of thousands of people who care about us. They care about us and getting us into a place where we can even be significant to ourselves. And so that song, The Woman I Used to Be, and the reason that I chose that this morning is because I met with a young couple. The father was in crisis, and he had come into the hospital. And I went to meet with them. And with them was, they had a daughter who, her name is Serenity.
That's like a... There's a movie called Serenity.
Serenity,
about
yeah.
a bunch of outlaws in outer space or something.
Okay, I'm gonna have to look that one up, John. But the name, you know, and it just it's just so ironic that I was there because a family was in crisis and they needed community, and there was Serenity, and she was just a little adorable little 3 year old. Serenity is
three. Wow.
And the first thing that came out of her mouth was, "Where is Santa Claus?" She said, "Daddy," because Daddy was laying on the bed there. They had given him Narcan, and
yeah,
he was in tears, and
he was.
And she took his hand and said, "Daddy, don't cry." She laid his hand on her face. 3 years old.
Wow.
Said, "Daddy, don't cry. Santa is coming. You know, Santa Claus is coming." And so she just kept talking about Santa. And I said, "Isn't that amazing that we would be given the opportunity to help somebody?" Go ahead, John.
I think that connections between children and their parents are just, they're so profound, right? They're everything.
They're everything.
So that...
even when the family is just in turmoil and diverse.
Who else is there, right?
Is there? And right. She was comforting the mom and the dad. And so...
doing her job.
Yeah. And so it was very moving. I got to tell you, it was very uplifting for me. And so, by the way, I am a recovery coach with the Recovery Coach Association of Western Virginia in the Eastern Panhandle. And we also have established in Jefferson County a quick response team, which I was honored to be chosen to be a member of quick response team, which a team of individuals go out into the community and help a family that is in crisis, a family that has requested help. And we visit the home. It would be law enforcement, one law enforcement person, one emergency medical technician person, and one recovery coach from Grace, the recovery coaches. But it's just amazing how the community is coming together in all areas of this. And the song, I believe, matches correctly to the title of this morning's Recovery Radio show, which is Recovery Ready Families. And I found that, after getting this person into detox and speaking with them several times after being admitted into detox, we wanted to work on a aftercare plan for this family. And one of the biggest obstacles is transportation. To and from appointments, to and from resources. And it takes a lot of time and a lot of patience. And so I'm just proud to be part of this movement that's going on, because we are really under attack from addiction. You know, it might. Go ahead, John.
Words of music there by Gracie Vandiver and David Rivers, it says.
Okay, that was it. The Woman I Meant to Be.
Right, from the Prism Award winning CD Trail of Light.
Mm-hmm. And that was just amazing. The lyrics are just so profound for me. And some of the things that she was saying, is I feel like, says, I've never meant to leave broken hearts scattered on the path of those who tried to love me when I couldn't love them back. And the family that was in crisis, as a matter of fact, I'm talking and in contact with all three. And so what they do as a recovery coach that works in the emergency room, when I'm on call, there's a list that goes up, a calendar that goes up to all the recovery coaches who participate in the emergency room. And at present, there's 15 of us. And one recovery coach, myself, I live in Berkeley County, but I'm responsible on a particular evening from 4 o'clock to 8:30. I'm on call, and I cover Jefferson Hospital emergency room as well as Berkeley County emergency room. So if you get a call from both hospitals, how do you cover? How do you manage that? And so how far is it from Berkeley to Jefferson? It's probably
15 miles maybe. 15 miles. Yeah, I'm guessing a little bit, but yeah. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they worked it out. Marty Steiner and John Unger, they worked out a pretty good schedule. And then we have a backup. Like if a person is in crisis and another hospital calls, we have most of the 15 people usually keep their phones close by. Because we stay on. And it seems to be working, John, because we're getting people into recovery. Now, I've also had a couple of people to abscond on me after we went through the court system, got them out of the jail, and got them into rehab.
Yeah. Well, you got to sort of, I guess, steel yourself that that's going to happen.
That's
right?
Going to happen.
You know, it's just
that's part of the process. And it's become
the bad part is if you go 6 years and you've yet to see someone that didn't abscond, then you might start to question yourself, you know. But
that's right. And so people, you know, and then those I'm running into those that say, she's gonna be business as usual. Why are you giving? You spending taxpayers' money? And what I'm finding, what I'm being taught as a recovery coach and somebody that gives back to the community. Is that you have to be really prepared.
If I save 1 in 10, I'm saving the taxpayers' money.
Saving the taxpayers' money if you count up the costs.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, if you save even, you know, one a week, you're probably going to end up ahead.
Yeah, and remember serenity always. I mean, so her little bright eyes and even tempered, she wasn't one of those manic, I guess, babies and
right.
Those babies that, you know, you have to be saying, sit down, shut up, that, you know, whatever. She was just nice. I don't know. That's traumatizing.
Well, that's what you're saying, there's kind of a multiplier effect. And if you can save somebody or if they can save themselves, then there's more than them that gets saved. That's their family and innocent lives like serenity.
Serenity. And you know what? I thought about it, John. That is traumatizing for her. That's trauma.
Oh yeah.
So the adverse childhood experiences survey that they give a lot of people. You know, I know it's not a new tool, but a lot of people haven't heard of it. And what you do is you ask a series of questions that have been scientifically prepared. And you,
I sometimes wonder what that means.
Hangar 13. What is that? Hangar 13, the one that they want.
I don't know.
But anyway, so they do the ACE, and I got a couple of those forms too. The questions, and the questions are really, really pretty good and impactful. Right. It made me think about my own adverse experiences at home that I had swept aside.
It might depend on how it all worked out, what the trauma happened. See, like if you're a young kid and you know your whole world starts to fall apart and you expend all this concern and emotion and God knows whatever, try to do whatever you can do, and if it works out and the family hangs together somehow or the thing you then well okay, but then it's kind of like a a morality tale about personal strength, right? Mm-hmm. That you helped, and you know, hey, you get in hard times, everybody works together, and maybe you can get through it. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if it all falls apart completely, right, then it's kind of like the reverse in a way. Like all this happened, and I got nothing for it. Nothing happened, and it was like just still a loser all the way down. And then you can see how that would scar someone in a different way, maybe.
It's a lot, but it's doable. It's a lot, and I'm talking about the caregivers now. It's doable for us to be able to reach out and help people. One of the things that I talked to the young mother, and they were, he's like 28 and she's 22 years old, homeless also. And they caught up, you know, in the middle of a lot of obstacles. You know, you can say, I want to get clean. I want to do this and I want to do that. But all the barriers. So when he gets, it's been like 10 days now. And so when he's discharged from the detox center, he has to either go into a short or long-term rehabilitation center, or he has to go into the Oxford House. He can't go where his wife is living. He can't go with her because she's living with somebody and she has a baby with her. And she is informed me that she's 6 weeks pregnant.
But with the guy that she's hanging with.
With the guy. And also, we can expect, and I hope not, she doesn't talk like she's addicted to anything, that she's not, you know, going to bring us a baby that has to go into that
detox
thing as a baby. So that's another part of this whole thing.
Sure.
Yeah. And when the thing that struck me as where we can come into play is she has a valid driver's license, which is a good place to start. And she said to me, well, if he needs transportation to a rehab, which is 5 hours away, I don't think my car can make it. So I talked to the young gentleman, and he was telling me about his story and how he got here. And it involved drugs in the family. I'm talking about his mother and father in prison. It also involved the murder of his brother. And so he left his place of residence, came here to West Virginia to live.
Where was he living before?
Baltimore. Well, that's almost like a given now. Either Baltimore or Washington will come out of people's mouth when we're talking to a lot of these folks. I got people are coming down from New York, and they're just all places, but one of the major populations coming here is Baltimore.
So they come here looking for to get the heck out of Baltimore.
Get away from the bullets.
Yeah.
Never mind the drugs.
Yeah.
Because they come here and get the drugs and everything. And, you know, you can find bullets flying here as well. I'm sure that for me, I realize that wherever I go, I take me with me. So it's not the geographical locations that get you to, you know, to stay stopped. It's you. You have to decide. Mm-hmm. But poverty and displacement and people are in disparity, and
that can lose your motivation. Yeah.
So I'm finding it very helpful for me, and intriguing and challenging, to be able to present myself as a viable resource for someone that's like that. Not to do things for them, but to give them
because you only have a certain amount of capacity. I mean, one person, right.
So, but we're at the Recovery Coaches are putting together an awesome team of people who
How many involved now?
Well, it's 15 in the emergency room, but Recovery Coaches as a whole, I've counted 200. Wow. Just in the Eastern Panhandle.
Wow.
Yeah, people are still taking classes to do that. Now, you get the classes.
That's a lot of participation. That's actually good. Mm-hmm. Are they going to get paid anything? I mean,
well, yeah, because maybe. I've started to get paid.
This is part of the grant, right? Kind of deal. So it might probably not going to go on forever. But yeah, I got you.
Until we can come up with
get
something
some more.
Else.
Yeah.
We got a footing.
And you have somebody working for you that's going to be able to do these forms and try to figure out where to get the money.
That's what we were doing this morning. We got lawyers on board. We got accountants on board.
Mm-hmm.
We got
is John Unger still directing or partially directing this? Yeah.
Right at the top.
Okay, I thought so.
He's right at the top.
Interesting guy.
Yeah. And he is the humility of it all within the community of caregivers and people who are advocates is that they recognize how impossible it is to overcome this situation, the pestilence, the epidemic that we face, without those who have been there and came back with the experience and to be able to apply that and to help people out.
It's invaluable. I mean,
it's invaluable, it has always been, but it's now it's starting to be recognized.
What's Salim doing these days? You mentioned him earlier, and then he hadn't called in. I thought he was kind of an interesting caller.
Yeah, he was going. You know, he has a wife that's bedridden, and he's going through some things with the VA and the funding.
Right,
and he's kind of he's very happy that he's alive for one thing. Mm-hmm. And so when he starts to lay back and take it easy, you don't hear from him, because that's the kind of life. I think that because he's stable with his wife and he's a Vietnam veteran and he's compensated well, in my opinion, he's taken that and decided to just cool out. You know, he's going to be 70 years old.
Right.
And so now, and so when I call him from time to time, and I was telling him, he said, well, what about the playground? What about the radio show? I said, we still got it on file. We're going to get back to it. But right now, because we was going through the election and we're trying to build something within the recovery community, all the people that I can get on air with my limited time, and you know, I decided to use it like that for recovery, to bring real families face to face with the microphone.
I thought that was interesting. The minister you had on there, the pastor, she was interesting.
Yeah,
the author and pastor, I guess. Yeah,
putting all those pieces together right here.
Yeah, I mean, a very different perspective, and I gotta confess that when people start doing the biblical or ministerial mumbo jumbo, let me just say, you can tell by my intent. Mm-hmm. That's how it sounds to me sometimes.
Right.
But you know, why are you putting paprika on your potato? I don't know. That's just the way they put paprika on it. I don't know.
That was a pretty good show. I enjoyed it, and I'm going to have her back because the people are getting on my contact list. But I can tell you, John, one of the things that makes Recovery Radio and what we're doing here is very important, I believe, as a piece that we can use to just take the blinders off of a lot of people, to get people to come on and talk about their differences, the families.
Right.
You know, to get this young lady who I was going to have her come on and talk about what it is that the community can do to help you. What are your challenges? What are some of the barriers that we can move out of the way to make sure that this little girl, I'm talking about Serenity now, has the best chance at a really good life, not just a decent life, you know what I mean? I heard someone say this morning, one of the grant writers said that excellence is the enemy of good. And I thought that was pretty good for her to say that. That was excellent. So excellence is the enemy of good, you know. So if you become excellent, then good has to take a back seat. I don't want to just get by anymore, and I don't want to just make it from one storm to the next. You know, when people ask me how I'm doing, I want to say I'm doing excellent. Oh, I'm doing great. And I want to mean it, you know, because, you know, I find that within the advocacy community, people who are willing to provide and come out and volunteer, you know, you have to put on a face a lot of times.
Well, and also, I mean, the work that you're doing is, I mean, the ministers would call it pastoral work, I'm sure, you know, and that is the hardest job of that profession, frankly, is to visit the sick and dying. And, you know, it's very difficult to do without absorbing some of that karma, you know, carrying it around. You know, how do you did you ever see an old movie that was called The Green Mile?
The Green Mile, I saw it.
You know, and you remember that guy, the big guy, what's the name of the big guy that was in the... he's a cool actor. Yeah, is he gone now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But anyway, the way he would absorb... this perform this miracle, but absorb this pain, you know, or this darkness, right? That was, and somehow let it out another way, right? I mean,
that was good, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, it was a great movie, really, in a lot of ways. And
And it's funny that you would mention, just you know how you absorb. You can, you know, transfer those feelings to yourself, and get despair. And so we're recovery coaches do something, the mindfulness. We invite each other to come in.
Michael somebody was his name.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. mindfulness, right? Michael, who are we talking about?
Oh, the guy in the Green Mile.
The Green Mile, the big guy.
The big guy, yeah.
And so I did this weekend. I went to a three-day little getaway down in Virginia, Massanutten. It's right close to home, and I encourage everybody that is advocating and making meetings and doing what I'm doing. It's very exhausting, a lot of moving. So I said, well, every now and then, because I own a timeshare down in Massanutten, I'm going to do a three-day weekend often, whenever, and you can actually feel the difference.
After you take a break.
And so the tangibles and the touchables are not always the things that bring us down, you know. It's the things that we really can't see and touch with our hands. And I got away and I got a chance to turn the phone off and sit back. And so it doesn't take long for you to get rejuvenated.
Well, that's good, man. That's very good.
So that was.
I mean, I'm glad you got a share of some kind. Where's it in the
Massanutten?
Where is that? Virginia?
Yeah, that's in Virginia. Okay. It's an hour and 20 minutes from where we're sitting right now, and all it's right. A beautiful resort. I'm going to give you a card to get you down there.
Well, get me down there.
I'm going to
right. Not in the middle of winter.
Well, you can. Yeah.
Are you sure it's on the beach in the wintertime? Is it?
No, it's not a beach.
Oh, okay.
It's Massanutten, Virginia, but they have like 5 indoor swimming pools. They got all kind of.
Oh, it's a place like this. Okay,
yeah,
I got you.
They got about an 8-story water park, but they have an awesome dinner theater thing.
Cool.
And
then they have some performances?
Live performances. You know, winter you can ski, in the summer you can bungee jump or whatever you want to do.
Bungee jumping I will not be. Okay.
It's really a nice place. I'm surprised you've never heard of it.
But probably if you go SEAL team, that's probably the first day they have you bungee jump all day, right, you know. Right. So you just get used to dying, you know. But
you can jump with somebody else's parachute. Trust me. You know, I wrapped it right. It's going to open.
I heard a great expression here the other day. A mind is like a parachute. It has to open to be any good.
Hey, listen, and that is what we here on Recovery Radio are trying to enlighten those who have the deep pockets. Yeah, you got to open. You got to have an open mind, man. That's right. It's no good.
Well, otherwise, you just get, you know, you get one thing in your mind and
that's it.
You get run over by the thing you were not paying attention to, you know.
And
so,
and you hit the ground pretty hard.
Right, I know. I didn't see that truck. You didn't tell me about trucks. What?
You should have opened the thing up. You're trying to save the parachute. But yeah, so it was great. I mean, so the recovery community, the advocacy community, they're taking small steps. Sometimes we feel like, as people on the outside, we feel like they're not moving fast enough, and they're probably not. But it feels better to think that they are, you know, that we are moving forward. Sometimes, you know, you can see further than people who are still struggling with things, and so they don't, they can't really.
It's hard to concentrate on the end of the week. Yeah. Never to mind, you know, yeah, 2 weeks.
Down the road,
yeah,
I know. Road, you know, but I, you know, I've been sitting and listening and being hopeful, and I see some of the changes are very slow, and that's because, you know, slow people are handling the money. People that think that they, you know, that everything has to be scrutinized to the extent that they scrutinize it. And
but see, that in so many cases, the purpose is they claim, oh, we're going to prevent fraud. No, that's not the purpose. The purpose is to prevent people from getting care.
Right.
And, you know, I wonder a lot about that because I'm familiar with that attitude because I grew up with it mm-hmm. to a certain extent. And I think it comes in part from this individualism in the United States yeah. a little bit, because which may have, you know, I'm cool. If you're on the frontier,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean, whether you make it or not is probably going to have a lot to do with your individual character and luck, you know, whether you happen to be in the path of some marauding disaster, okay?
I know.
I mean, maybe you end up okay and you get a big farm and, mm-hmm. and maybe you just get an arrow in the head. Who knows, right? Okay, but whatever. I can see how you could... the ideology or the ideas of individualism could prosper, and you know, you got this open thing, get out on your own, get the hell away from it, you know, the mess. And but you know, we're a mass society now, and you know, to a certain extent, that can, somewhere along the world, the individualism got twisted into some sense of privilege where, you know, I got mine and, why should I pay a dime of taxes?
Yeah.
Why should there be a public option for you to get health care?
Mm-hmm.
For anything, I mean, yeah, I mean, healthcare, whatever.
Yeah.
And you get this, and then everybody says, "Oh well, you know, I'm just being like John Wayne and the old."
Yeah.
They appeal to all these images, like of the West or this or that or whatever, you know, and pretty soon but that.
John said
that was 200 years ago, and there wasn't anybody else around but the deputy and his foe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was it, you know. And there weren't any women in town. They say there's women in town, but there weren't. Okay, the only women in those far west frontier towns were prostitutes. That's the only way they got there.
That's it. Uh-huh.
You know, and then they get, you know, well, get married while you're there. Sure, I mean, whatever. But yeah. I mean, and you know, you had a marginal existence way out there. Everybody did, and. You know, you were lucky if you got a shot of whiskey and a raw egg, you're probably doing pretty good for the
day. Doing good. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Boy, them alcoholics back in them days, they would sleep under the porch. I mean, they're doing the same thing now, sleeping behind Walmart.
Well, yeah, but there's no...
John Wayne said, you're better, you're tough, kid.
That's right.
He said...
Well, but then they say, well, what about my kids? Oh, yeah, they're better off without you.
Yeah.
Boom.
Boom.
You know,
yeah. Yes.
Anyway,
and you know what? And I experienced a situation where someone, I believe, shot first and asked questions later, and with me, you know, which is a long story. And that's even in this community. I was fired by an individual for something that I didn't do. So he shot me first,
right,
and then asked questions later. And then when he found out that he owed me apology, I was already dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Sorry. Yeah, right. Oh, damn. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And then the thing is, I think the relationship with he and I now is, hey, man, just don't talk about that. You know, it's like,
right.
Yeah, that's the look I get from
don't
him.
Tell anybody.
Yeah, don't tell anybody. You know, we can just let it go or forget about it.
Oops.
Yeah, yeah.
James
yeah.
just told everybody on the radio, but
yeah.
it's okay.
Yeah.
We didn't mention any names. Though,
we don't know. We're keeping your anonymity. But, I'm getting into a place where I'm seeing a lot in the jail. I've been, you know, interacting with people that are locked up for... minor offenses with drugs, possession mostly.
Yeah.
And
which is stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. And keeping them.
It achieves absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm. And it's a few judges that I've talked to that seem to be, you know, buying into the idea of help, not handcuffs. And they're giving people opportunity. But the people who are getting these opportunities. You guys don't run. Do work your program. You got 1 to 10 years hanging over your head. You're going to go and say, well, first of all, you agree with the judge that you're going to do what the judge tells you right. you must do.
Yeah.
And everything is okay. You get out of jail. You get transported. We hand carry you to your rehabilitation center. And a week after you get there, you leave. Now, being on the run, first of all, when I meet an individual, I find out if they have family, children especially. And
yeah.
I've gotten a couple of guys, they just take off and just, you know, leave the kids, which is nothing new. It's been happening for decades.
Yeah.
But that is a challenge that we must face. So what do you do about that, John, in terms of either keep doing what you're doing, if you were the courts? And, you know, how would you, because the judges are going to get hardened by that.
Yeah, the judges don't like that, yeah. On the other hand, I mean, what's the alternative? I mean, I don't know what the alternative is. The society has to spend some money on addiction, a lot more than they're spending now. And they got to be able to, you know, there are situations where I believe there's no solution that fits everything. But I believe that you could construct, for example, a national service organization.
Good idea.
That
national service organization.
A little bit like the old CCCs in the 30s and stuff like that, that were, you know, you put people into a program where they're basically going to be working on some public projects or different services, whatever. And, you know, and they change their environment completely, all right? And, you know, it used to be the CCC jobs in the early part of the Depression would go about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then go out and build culverts across rivers up in Vermont or someplace. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, but mm-hmm. or libraries, or build libraries. They did a lot of that. They built some bridges and got involved. And even some of them, they were artists, got involved in painting things and doing stuff, right? So... Mm-hmm. And you had a lot of people involved, and it was a way to avoid, right, the worst aspects of the Depression. I mean, it didn't, I think they say you basically got $1 a day plus 3 hots in a cot, and of the dollar, 75 cents went to your family. You got a quarter.
You got a quarter. And you
okay.
With that.
And you were working, but you were working, you know, 6 days a week, and I guess that gives you $1.25 in 1931 to go into town. And you had everything you required for a while. And, you know, I mean, I know maybe you could do something comparable, a program, you know, where you got to take people out of an environment having to. Otherwise, the odds of them sort of changing the situation are limited, right? They have the same people, the same friends, or the same lack of friends, or the same this, and the same. Probably a worse job, you know, because they, you know, come out of jail getting a better job usually, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so all the objective circumstances are be easily pressure someone to give the heck up, right? You know? So I think having a way, especially youth, of removing them from that. And but then that's like people will say, oh my God. I'm sure there's some criticism of that. I think they probably did it in Russia somewhere. You know, oh, we can't do that. You know, whatever. Anyway, I don't know. That sounds like Mao in China or something. You know, he or you know, or Lumumba or whatever. Somebody they did that kind of thing. No.
Hey, what was the name of the volunteer program that John Kennedy come up with?
Vista.
What was it?
It's Volunteers in Service to America.
Mm-hmm. It was
In the Peace Corps.
Peace Corps.
Right. That was the international. And Vista was the domestic one.
Mm-hmm.
The Peace Corps was international.
Okay. And he made a speech in that. He said something. He said, when you have ascertained a certain felt local need, you must then find someone with the wherewithal to help in exactly meeting that need. The wherewithal, find someone. Now, when you have ascertained a certain felt local need, the certain felt local need for Recovery Radio is recovery for people who are suffering with substance abuse. people who are addicted to heroin.
What percentage of the people that you deal with, or that even have seen in an emergency room, if they got sober, just sober, okay, not free of the addiction, just sober, how many of them would be able-bodied workers? Could be.
I would say the people that I work with, I would say that I've come in contact with 70%.
See, well, that's quite a few.
Yeah.
Okay, that you could recruit into a program of work. Now, you know, the problem is, you know, I was running this thing and someone says, oh, well, you know, what's that going to be, a Hitler work camp or something? I don't know. There's some risks of that kind of thing. So I don't want to just go off and say, oh, well, no, that would never happen.
Yeah,
that's happened in the past. Okay, so you can't be ignorant about it. But on the other hand, I don't see any way to pull people out of situations except by some organized effort.
Organized effort. And you know what, John, I'll tell you this right here. And the organization comes in, it starts when people are free. Freedom. Freedom to tailor-make their own pathway to recovery. So an organized group, what do we offer? Well, let's offer an opportunity or the ability to grant your wish. What is your passion? What do you like to do? What education should we, how do you get to the education? How do you get over these barriers? That's the organized effort that needs to happen so that people can create the job or go to the job that they're best suited for. But what is happening now, you just need a job. So you get to Walmart, stacking cans, and you're frustrated.
Yep.
And one day you get a case of the effets. now you're off the job because the job, I mean, let's face it, most of the time people are working just to get by.
Yep.
Right. And when they come into a recovery. And the frustration, and when frustration jumps on your back in recovery, you're gonna have to have some kind of support to get that monkey off your back.
Otherwise, it's
somebody got to pull him off your back. And you know, I'm speaking figuratively,
but
you can look. It's a literal sense when you think about somebody like Serenity, little Serenity, 3 years old. You remember I mentioned her. So all of these need to go into that organized group. We need to think about it, talk about it, put it in
motion. We need a brigade here,
right? We need a brigade. Yeah. So the Recovery Coaches Association, I was telling them, you're a recovery coach. Now we want you to be elite. You know, we got the Army and the Marines, and then we got the SEALs teams, and then we got different levels. We need people for reconnaissance. Go out into the communities and do some recon. Bring back a report. The Recovery Coaches Association meet every second Wednesday of the month, and we pick different locations where we meet, and we have business meetings, and we go over highlights, just like they do in football, and we exchange experiences and ideas, and we try to perfect it. You know, we want, people are doing good, but we want people to do excellent, because when that frustration gorilla jumps on your back in the middle of the night while you're in Walmart thinking once you get out of Walmart, you got to go to another job, or you got to go to a home that has no lighting or heat or food. You know, yes.
Sorry about that.
That's good.
I was just trying to figure out where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
We're at an hour, you know, I think, so.
Okay.
If you want to.
We can end it right now, but.
Anyway. Am I right? Hold on a second.
We good?
I'm blind, James, so hold on.
That's all right. Me too.
No, we're at 43 minutes, but 40, that's about right. Uh-huh. We're at 43 minutes. Hello, everybody. This is enlightenedradio.org. You can get to us on www.enlightenedradio.org. Also, you can go to the page. The site for this radio program, which is recovery.enlightenedradio.org.
Oh, okay.
And
recovery, say that again to me.
recovery.enlightenedradio.org. Yeah, see,
is
so
that right?
that's James's website anyway, and so or I think we're visible on Facebook as well, Enlightened Radio. So we usually post these podcasts here within a couple 2 or 3 days after the
Yeah.
After it goes, they're going to be kind of raw. I took some time editing a couple of them, and it takes a lot of time. So I'm until I get some help on that, they're going to tend to be raw, more raw. But that's okay. You guys like raw. You know, you get to hear what the real thing is. Right. You know, the little slips and the and all that. Yeah. You know, so it'll still be very informative.
Recovery Radio is like they say is 100.
Okay.
Yeah. We run 100, but it's exciting for me, John. Really, and I say this to you all the time, that the everything has to change for a person to want to stay into long term recovery. There's once you get into a place where you can actually see some progress in your life, things start to get on automatic pilot, and to help you to stay stopped. But like I always say, we can get over the hump. But when we get over there, it has to be something in place over there. You were saying you go back and there's nothing there.
Yeah, I mean, and you have to get a new connection to life somehow that is it relies upon you and your commitment. But I mean, and I think also, I mean, you have to get a situation where people are consulting other countries and other solutions and finding out what works. I mean, I'm sure there's more than one approach that's been used in lots of places. I mean, my understanding is that the ones where they basically legalized the drug system and then regulated it are working the best.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my understanding. The Portugal, Uruguay, and there's different versions of it going on in France and in the UK as well, but I don't think they're as extensive. You know, I think the prison system's still involved there, but and I don't know. I understand they're thinking about a big change in China about it too. You know, which is huge because they're a gigantic country.
Yeah.
You know, let's don't just use the prison system, okay?
Yeah.
It's not working, right?
Yeah, so it's not working. And, it's not working at all. And you know, in the prison system, the ERJ here, I talked to those guys, and shout out to Kevin Knowles, actually.
Right.
Got me $100 to put into the account, the phone account I was telling you about. And so he said, let's do it, man.
I got a call the other night in the middle of the night from some prisoner in Colorado called DJ.
DJ in Colorado. I don't know. Did he?
Well, the number said Colorado. Now, I don't know whether the prison routes calls all the way out to... I don't know how they route calls from inmates.
Did you talk to the person?
I said, I don't know who you are. And he says, oh, I'm sorry, I hung up. You know.
Oh, that's on your cell phone or Skype?
It was on my cell.
Oh, okay. And that's something... You know, we were just talking about, you said something about Portugal. Portugal's radical
policy. Yeah, they have...
Working, it says, is working. It's got a big is.
Yeah, is working.
What and is working?
So, I mean, finding out what's working and then introduce that, I mean, in a big way, not just, okay, oh, well, you know, I'm saving 1 out of 10 a week or something like that, okay, which is really, okay, that's still worth doing, but... man, that's a 90% failure rate, you know, too. So,
yeah,
you know, right. It's hard to advertise it as success, right? So, at least credibly.
Yes, credibly.
And then, but I think having an example that works is so important because otherwise, see these guys that really figure that all the poor people who can't afford to live should just die. They don't have to do anything, and that just sort of happens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't even have to campaign on it much. Well, if we don't do anything, that's what'll happen. Kind of where it's at.
Yeah, Portugal's radical drug policy is working. I'm going to talk about that on another show, but that's just amazing. You know, we're the meeting I was in this morning. We were talking about harm reduction here in Jefferson County, and that is on the fast track to being approved. They have one in Berkeley County already at the health department where they hand out clean needles and information, and people are tested for HIV and for hepatitis and they get clean needles and a cooker and and they're on their way. But guess what? We found out, because I do put a lot of boots on the ground and go out into the projects, and people are taking those needles, and those needles are selling for $7 a piece. Because if you come in, they have it once a week on Wednesday, and they give you enough needles to last you until the next Wednesday. So the question is, how many needles do you use a day? Oh, I use three. So they give you 7 times 3. That's 21 needles on Wednesday. So you take the 21 needles because you probably lied about the 3 times a day.
Yeah.
So it's it's creating a black market. But the ideology is keep them alive. Keep them alive and keep them clean. And if people are going to still catch diseases, because when you're in the throes of addiction, especially from heroin, if you don't have a clean needle, you don't care as long as the needle works. You just want to get that chemical in your veins.
You. Yeah, regardless of whether it gives you AIDS or not.
Yeah, I don't know. And so I think that the conversation about Portugal and having control and having people in a safe injection place.
So those
other people are going to behave that way regardless. You know, those people that if they find a needle and they can make it work.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they don't waste time. And then some people forget to go to the clinic, they say.
Yeah.
But those are the things that we're up against. If you think about it, that is a mess.
That's a mess. I can't believe an administration, and if you really looked at this and he decided to consult science a little more than everybody's prejudices about it, you'd be. But we're apparently a ways away from that. We're a universe away from that, given the fact that we have a complete fool as president. And so I don't know. I mean, there's nothing. He's not going to do anything about any of this. I don't think he cares, frankly. So you got all these problems. You got to line up these in order, right? I mean, well, we'd like to do A, B, C, but until we get Z done. Mm-hmm. The rest of it's just going to sit there. We're just going to be yapping about it. Okay. We'll be talking, and they'll be dying. You know, whatever. All right.
Let's close out with Marvin Gaye. What's going on?
Oh, Marvin Gaye. By the way, I figured out a way to play this on our site without having Facebook give me a hard time. It's a little cheaty, but I did it anyway. Let's see. Marvin Gaye. Oh, I got to get. Just hold on, I gotta get the right thing up here.
We'll be right at you.
I gotta get iTunes on, because otherwise I gotta find it on the line.
Yeah, I gotta.
It's coming up on the guitar here, folks. Just any minute. There we go. And now we got. It's acting like I did something to the library, because it's checking the library. Uh-huh. That's usually a sign that I shut down improperly.
Here we go.
But it's maybe I should get it on the internet. Okay, what's going on?
What's going on? There's too many of you crying, brother, brother, brother. Come on, Mom, sing to us. Sing to his mom. Marvin had a drug problem too.
24/7 News Networks, live on YouTube TV.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
What's your name?
You've been caught it, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right
on. Mother, there's too many of you. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. War is not the answer.
for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love in here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh,
right now.
Judge us simply cause our hair is long. Oh, you know that we've got to find a way. Bring some understanding here today. Oh, oh, oh. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me. You can't see.